Hey guys, what up? It's your host, Ryan Sketch, here at Sketchbook Audio. Before we get started with the show today, I just wanted to give a shout out to everybody who's been listening to this. Without you guys, this show would not exist. I've been going a little bit over a year strong now, and I feel like with every new episode, it just keeps getting better. But I need your guys' help. Please download the Anchor app, create a profile, send me a message on here. It's really easy to do. Or go to anchor.fm, shoot me a message, and you can even use the sketchbook underscore audio Instagram page to send me a message. I would appreciate it. I would really like to hear some input from you guys about the show. How's it going? What would you like to hear music-wise? Right now, that's actually Griffin, who's an American DJ, and that's featuring Ivy Adera, and the song's called Bye Bye. So I'll play more of that. I'll play more of this, more of that, you know, whatever. And then, of course, whatever you guys are interested in talking about. Next week, we're going to be talking about phones, cell phones, and other gadgets. And I think that's going to really lead into a lot more product design. Because, let's face it, phones are integral parts of our life now. And there are good designs out there. There are bad designs. And then there's retro designs that I think need to make a comeback. And there's news that a lot of them might. So I'm hopeful that's going to be all part of Sketchbook underscore audio. Sorry, Sketchbook Audio. Thanks for tuning in, guys. I hope you enjoy this episode. It's mostly about the BMW X2, but I think you're going to like it because it's a weird car and I'm a weird guy. And I think a lot of my listeners are weird too. Because you're listening to me. Anyways, stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hey guys, what up? It's your host, Ryan Sketch, here at Sketchbook Audio. Thanks for tuning in. Listen, this song is, as the kids say, lit. It's Back to Life by Haley Steinfeld. And this is not the version that I absolutely love. It's the 80s version that I love. And the 80s version is a little bit more upbeat, a little bit faster. And obviously, it's drenched in 80s goodness and commonalities. So I just watched Bumblebee again for obvious reasons. One being, it's a freaking awesome movie. And for two, there's something about the culture and the history behind certain toys, Transformers being one of those that just, it transcends time and all the different generations. And Bumblebee is a good example of how it's getting better. You know, I don't want to shit on Michael Bay too much because he made a valiant attempt. Really, we're talking about giant robots, a kid-friendly scenario, right? Because Transformers has always been rooted in toys, comic books, and a 1980-something or another, it's like 86, 87, pop song, "You Got the Touch!" Yeah, I'm not a singer, which is why I'm doing a podcast where I talk. You don't have to think too much when it comes to movies like Transformers. You just don't. And that's part of the fun. And obviously Michael Bay didn't think too much. He just made things explode. He made things big. And then he made them go boom. There's nothing wrong with that inherently. What was wrong or what eventually started to happen was the storyline broke down and then there were some continuity issues. Of course, there was the whole switching from Shia LaBeouf being the main character and the main focus over to Mark Wahlberg. And while Mark Wahlberg isn't horrible to watch on screen, he's not quite as dramatic as The Rock, but he's also not as well versed like Christian Bale or Leonardo DiCaprio. He just has experience. And also, there is nothing wrong with that. There is just, that's some, his character is what you would expect to see from a Transformers movie, in all fairness. And that's a good thing. And I don't want to say it's bad. It's just Transformers is not meant to be taken seriously. It's meant to be fun. It's meant to be playful. It's meant to have the big explosions. And it's meant to have robots that are freaking massive doing things that aren't even possible. And just remind people of their childhood. And there's a beautiful thing to that. So Michael Bay, as I said, didn't fail. Really, the script writers and the people in the editing booths are the ones who failed, because, like I said, there were continuity issues, there was dialogue issues, and Shia LaBeouf did bail on film pretty much in general. He went from Transformers to that O movie, which was basically about orgasms and a lot of sex, and he got to be shown naked in movies. That was his goal. His dream was to be from, what was it, the Hilary Duff TV show, all the way to Transformers, making it big, making a lot of money, being the center focus, to showing his dongle, you know? Whatever, man. Priorities. And he made tons of money, and then he went all crazy. I will say, though, that I have mad respect for him for going out and just traveling the United States and just sort of train hopping and never really taking a car other than to get from maybe one little spot to the next. Backpacking, hiking. Just, I have a lot of respect for that. Unfortunately, only rich people can do that. Or poor people. Rich or poor people. Poor people get to do it because that's just how they're getting through life. Rich people can do it because they have money to do it the hell they want. So I don't know. I'm stuck somewhere in the middle, closer to the poor people's side, because I just don't have a crap ton of liquid cash. What I do have is a specific set of skills. I'm just kidding. I am not a bodyguard. I'm not a hitman, not anything like that. I am just an artist, a humble artist here to tell you guys all about the world of design. Now, interestingly enough, and we're gonna kind of push things back towards the automobile industry. First and foremost, there's no news. And no news isn't bad news. It's just no news means Ryan has very little to talk about when it comes to, all things interesting in the design world. But don't fret. I did manage to get out of my house yesterday and got to test drive something that I was very inspired by and surprised by, because I just imagined this being a very, I don't want to say feminine car, but much in the same way that the Mustang tends to be kind of looked upon as a feminine car, or like this ridiculously false uber masculine car. For the people who try to kill crowds of people at car shows, I test drove the BMW X2, and then I got to play around with the X2 M35i, which I'll get to in a second, but the X2, as it is, first of all, it's weird. I get that. That's going to be people's first impression if you know exactly what I'm talking about. And I'm going to try and post some pictures on Instagram here. But it's part of its weirdness is the fact that it sits in a segment that's probably all by itself. It's not a car, and it's not an SUV, and it's also not a traditional hatchback, much like the Golf or the Dodge Caliber or the Kia Forte 5, I think is what it was called, or the Elantra GT. It's not like that. It's stretched a little bit longer. It's kind of like my Range Rover Evoque, a little bit more aggressive. And there was just something about it that caught my eye, particularly at the auto show. And at the auto show, I got to see this galvanized yellow color, and I forget what it's really called. I'm going to see if I can find it. Let's see. Overview. It's called Galvanic Gold Metallic. Listen, if you don't like bright colors, this thing is just going to be off-putting. But between the Misano Blue, the Sunset Orange, which is a gorgeous color, by the way, and this Galvanic Gold, I was just sucked in and drawn towards the Galvanic Gold, especially when I found out you could get this really hot interior that is called Magma something or another. And oh man, it was just, it was beautiful. It was a thing of beauty. So meanwhile, while I'm looking at this thing, I'm thinking in my head, well, what about all the other vehicles you've been thinking about? And how does this fit into your mythos, your understanding of vehicles that will fit my lifestyle? And I was able to check off a lot of the boxes that I typically hold a car to when I'm looking at a new one. And by the way, I'm not necessarily looking at a new one to get one anytime soon. I was looking at it for the fact that I had a small electrical problem in my Range Rover, go figure. And I was just, thinking like, oh, what if I can't get this thing fixed? It does have 110,000 miles on it now. What if? And the things I dislike about my Range Rover are the navigation screen. It's very slow. The navigation itself isn't Android-based. It doesn't have Android Auto or Apple CarPlay. And the panoramic sunroof is just a giant piece of glass, which is fine. But I'm so used to having either like a fully open panoramic with my Jeep Cherokee and my Compass, or just a simple, one panel that my Caliber and a couple other cars that I've had. And the Land Rover fails there. The fuel economy sucks. And that's funny because it's basically the same 2.0 turbo that's in the Ford Focus ST, and it does better. Not tremendously better, but it does better. And everybody is using a 2.0 turbo right now. It's just the perfect size to throw a turbo on to get the maximum amount of horsepower and the maximum return on efficiency. And somehow Land Rover missed both of those marks. The Evoque isn't underwhelming by any means. It's just for the price, which, by the way, you can fully load a brand new Range Rover Evoque that's not even really out in the States yet, you can get up to $70,000. Trust me, there are a lot of better things I could spend 70 grand on. It's a sexy car, but I can shoot upstream a little bit and get a Velar and get a mid-level Velar fully loaded with all the same features and have a much bigger car, probably get the same fuel efficiency, at least on the highway. And, come on, it's a Velar. Thing is sexy. It's good design. Unless, of course, you're a diehard Land Rover fan and you like the old boxy, listen, I'm sorry. It's just not there anymore. Land Rover, you're going to get the Defender. It's coming out soon, which I can't wait to talk about that one, because that is just, we're going to have a nice little segment on historical relevancy of boxy cars. That'll be the title. Or, not thinking outside of the box. I don't know, something like that. But the Velar is just kind of the direction Land Rover is going to go, and for many reasons. One of them happens to be fuel efficiency. The other happens to be it's just sexy. So fight me. Argue that point. And, there's a good reason to message me on Sketchbook Audio, Sketchbook_Audio on Instagram, or through the Anchor app or anchor.fm. You can tell me why the Velar is not a sexy vehicle or why it sucks as a Range Rover. Go for it. I welcome all contenders. Anyways, so Land Rover, you know, my Evoque just had a bunch of things that I wasn't feeling. But it does have some clever and intuitive functionalities and conveniences that I do like, and that include the little storage compartment underneath the shifter, the fact that the shifter is a dial that raises and lowers, the sliding door that houses the cup holders and like a little spot for my cell phone or pens or change. And then the ambient lighting, and then the surround cameras, cause it was a 2012, and to have that surround view camera set up then, you know, I guess that was just top luxury at the point, right? So trickle down effect. Now everybody's got surround view cameras. Even the Nissan Kicks has cameras all around the car. But I do like those features. But when comparing it to the BMW X2 and a couple other vehicles, I was looking at the Gladiator. I really don't want to spend $50,000 on anything, for that matter. But $50,000 on a Gladiator that, you know, and I say 50 because $35,000 gets me the Sport, which gets me the shitty wheels, a stick shift, and nothing else. And the options list is non-existent. There are no options. You can get, I think, a nicer set of wheels. And by nicer, I mean like one size up, and they're not the steel snow tires you would get. You don't get the big mud tires. They're competent tires. They're just not, you know, the go anywhere, do anything kind of tires. And you know, and that's it. And you get a soft top. You even do not get power windows, or I don't even think power mirrors. You get manual mirrors and manual roll up windows. So that's what $35,000 gets me. $50,000 barely gets me a Rubicon. And a Rubicon without any options. So, well, with few options. A fully loaded Rubicon with every single option is like $61,000. I'm not spending. I would never spend that much money. But there is a market for it. It's just, I really like the fact that that truck is the perfect size. It's a great size. I don't care that's only a 5 foot bed. That's as long of a bed as I've ever needed. And if I gotta drop the tailgate, I get another foot, so I get 6 feet. And all I got to do is put straps or a barrier at the end, kind of like how the Ram and the F-150 and the Silverado have. They got that that bed extender. And then another vehicle I was looking at was another Evoque, but too expensive and not enough cargo space. The another vehicle I was looking at, it's not even out yet, and this is at the other end of the spectrum, but a Compass electric Trailhawk, which they showed at Geneva. I'm actually really excited for that vehicle because the horsepower and torque levels on that are insane. I don't know if you've seen them, but they're good. I don't have the specs, but I think it's like 240 pound-feet of torque and over 200 horsepower because of that electric motor on the back axle. Plus, now with all that torque, and the motor in the back, you don't have that shaft up the center, so you have fewer moving parts, and then you have a better weight balance. You don't have this massive shaft that you could damage or bend, and the torque is instant. So for off-roading, it's great. Plus, it's supposed to get like 35, 38 miles to the gallon in the city, and it's a plug-in, plus like a 30-mile range, just on electric only, and probably a full range between the electric and the gas, probably somewhere between 500 and 600 miles. That is awesome. I like that. I don't know how much it's going to cost. My guess is probably somewhere upwards of 38,000, 35,000, somewhere around there. Because a Trailhawk right now, I think you can load up and it'll come to 32, 33. Plus there's rebates and all that good stuff. But anywho, and the Compass has a fairly decent sized trunk. Plus, it's, you know, it's fully off-road capable. It's got the big panoramic sunroof. It has Android Auto. It ticks off all of the boxes. The only thing I didn't like about it is no stick shift and all black interior. We all know how much I hate all black interiors. The Trailhawk is all black, with the exception of red stitching and some red accents around the speakers and the shifter bezel. Oh, and the gauge bezel. It's just not enough, right? I want, like, white and black or gray and black or red. And, dude, if the Trailhawk seats were red with black stitching or, like, black wings on it, ugh, be a totally different story. Thus comes in the BMW X2. You can get pretty much every single color with the interior that is this magma, whatever the shit it's called. Magma, we'll call it magma red because I don't know the actual name of it. But it's beautiful. Let me see if I can find it. Okay, so I'm going to post a picture of this. It says magma red Dakota leather. And on the M series, oh man, it is a really good seat design. And they're Recaros, so you already know that they're meant for performance. They're comfortable as hell. They're going to last. And oh, they just look good. Very smart choice on BMW's part. The other things I liked about BMW were the clever armrest that actually picks up completely and folds out of the way, you know, leans back. There's a wireless charger inside the armrest, which is, to me, better than the wireless chargers that most car companies put inside the IP or under there somewhere for two reasons. One, my phone then still becomes reachable and I can see it, which means I'm going to be tempted to use it. The other part of it is none of those cubby holes ever seem to fit my massive Android, Samsung Note 9. And the Note 10 is going to be even bigger, and I'm already signed up. Well, my intentions are to sign up for it when it comes out. Let's put it that way. Samsung's been sending me emails, and I've been bothering them. When is it coming out? So probably August or September. Maybe we should have an episode on phone design. I think we should, because phones, specifically, now we have the folding phone. And so far for Samsung, it doesn't sound like it worked out so well. And Huawei and another company have their folding phones. I have no idea what the verdict is on those. But my guess is that screen can only fold so many times before it starts to have a seam. And then you're shit out of luck. Hopefully, you bought the insurance. And also, hopefully, you don't give a shit. Right? So, you know, there's that. But back to the BMW X2, the cleverness of the armrest, what the storage bin underneath the armrest, the storage in the doors are massive, tons of storage there. The storage in the IP, it's got two little sliding gates that feel really nice too. I think they're like a rubberized texture, but they have really nice metal levers, handles, little flanges that you push up when you pull down. It's simple. And then also heads-up display, which I'm a big, big fan proponent of heads-up displays. Chrysler has not yet figured out that people like heads-up displays. They refuse to put them in their cars. That's fine. They've come up with a lot of other clever ways of doing that. In fact, their infotainment system, as well as the Engage cluster screen, which is getting bigger and bigger, by the way, particularly on the Ram and a couple other vehicles. But it's very colorful. The saturation is great. It's very easy to read. And, you know, it does have your digital speedometer in there as well. I just wish it was up on the dash, like a heads-up display. I'm just saying, if anybody from FCA is listening to this, just put a heads-up display on your dash. Call it a day. Especially for off-roaders. If you had a heads-up display that maybe did some augmented reality to show you, like, you know, if there's a log here, a rock here, I don't know. I think it would be great. It would definitely help with, you know, when you're wheeling or off-roading, however you want to put it. But when you're wheeling and you get call outs for certain things like water ahead, and maybe it knows the depth based on GPS. I don't know. Things that could help you while you were doing something, especially if you are a kind of, you know, at the newbie level, you know, I don't know, something to think about. Audi and BMW and a couple other companies are already working on little things of augmented reality to help in certain situations like this. Maybe overlaying a big giant arrow to show you where to go. They have little ones inside the heads-up display, but what if you could go bigger? Yeah, you can always go bigger. Just ask my girlfriend. I'm just kidding. But back to the BMW X2. Lots of nifty things. The one thing I really loved about the car, it was in the cargo. It's a hatchback-esque thing. You know, it has the now ubiquitous kick foot thing sensor that knows when your foot's there and it just lifts it up like magic. Personally, I think that's an idiot tech. It's idiot tech, really, because I like to carry a lot of grocery bags and show off for my fiance. It's just what I do. But you know, forcing me to kick my foot out and balance everything on one leg, especially on my bad leg, should it ever happen, not a great thing. I'm liable to fall over. It's going to happen. So leave it to me to be the guy who sues these car companies for having just an idiot tech. But I'm not. It's just, you know, some people love it. Some people hate it. I got to imagine it's not great for women in high heels. It just does not seem like the thing you want to wear. Coming up here on 25 minutes, the last thing I wanted to talk about on the next two was, the cargo space. There's the load floor actually lifts up and there's like another 9 inches deep. So kudos to BMW for making a very practical, functional, and sexy looking, yet weird looking, almost alien BMW. I hear nothing but good things about its driving dynamics. What the little distance that I drove it, it felt solid. It felt planted. I wish I could take it on a track. And who knows? Maybe, just maybe, my lucky day will come when I can get the M35, I believe is what it's called. It doesn't say. But anyways, like I said earlier, there wasn't too much to talk about design-wise today. So this is a pass for anybody who, you know, just wanted to talk about cars and shoot the shit. So send me some messages, people. Please. I wanna chat with you guys on this show. It can't just be me talking and blabbing my mouth off. That would be horrible. But I've been sketching like crazy, and I've been posting them on the Sketchbook Audio Instagram page, sketchbook_audio. Check it out. Tell me what you think. Lately, I've been on this kick of, and I'm waiting for somebody to do a design challenge. Right now, the big design challenge is redesign the Volkswagen Golf. I like the Golf, but I don't care about it. It exists. I'm happy it exists. I'm happy it exists with the stick shift. And then the Golf R, I like that. It's just, it's not my thing. Volkswagen hasn't quite made a change in their interiors that really wow me. They're good. They're functional. They're simple. They're utilitarian. They're German. But given BMW and Mercedes and all the things that they're doing with their interiors, if I'm going to spend almost 40 grand on the Golf R, I think they're even more expensive than that. If I'm going to spend that much money, I want an interior that reflects that, not just the power, right? So I've been on this kick of drawing the 3000 GT. That is like my dream car. Hear me out in this last 3 minutes that I have. 3000 GT and its twin, the Dodge Stealth, came out in 1991, I believe. And the Stealth only lasted to about 95, 94, while the 3000 GT lasted until, I believe, 97 or 98. The 3000 GT had the VR4 model, which was four-wheel drive, four-wheel steering, meaning at certain speeds, all four tires would turn. Now, the rears would only turn a little bit, but the front would turn, you know, as normal. But that meant you could go and make a hard right turn or hard left turn at pretty ridiculous speeds and not slide, squeal your tires, nothing. It just, it gripped the roads. And that's high tech for the 90s, right? Expensive cars, and you're definitely paying a premium for the VR4 and its Dodge Twin, the RT Twin Turbo, but which, by the way, was a mouthful. Dodge Stealth RT TT. Yeah. What else did it have? It had active aero elements, the Quadrifoglio, Stelvio, and the Giulia. They both have an active aero front dam. This had an active wing to it in the back. It would tilt, and then all, you know, which helps eliminate drag and keeps the car planted, especially at high speeds. It also had an active exhaust. It would essentially cut off two pipes. So on the VR4 and the Twin Turbo RT, it had quad pipes. So the inner two pipes would be shut off, and then you could flip the switch, and then all four would be on, and it was just loud and mean. 310-ish, 322 horsepower V6 Twin Turbo. Ugh, just a great car. And there was a lot of other tech in there. You know what? I'm going to post a bunch of pics and specs up on the Instagram page. I think you guys will really enjoy it. And hopefully you enjoy my renditions of what I think a 2025, 2022 would look like, because it would be a great competitor against the Toyota Supra. So Dodge or Mitsubishi, if you're listening to me, I know you don't care because nobody wants sports cars anymore. They're just niche and they don't bring in the money like a Jeep Grand Cherokee or Ram does. Anyways, get your sketchbooks out. It's nice out here in Detroit. I think it's nice pretty much everywhere else now. We're in spring officially. And be good to one another. Life's too short to be a dick. So peace out, and we will talk next week about phones. This is Sketchbook Audio, Ryan Sketch signing off.